Loyal listeners, if you ever wanted to get an ad-free edition of the HLS podcast, plus get a weekly bonus episode recapping the national picture, make sure you head over to patreon.com/ndtex. Again, that is patreon.com/ndtex. You will also get some other exclusive content in the form of posts every week as well. So make sure to join our Patreons, including new Patreons Stacy F. and Shane P. No, not the other Shane that podcasts with me. This is a different one. But make sure you join them as well as all of our other Lowell Patreons. Thank you all for your support. Hello and welcome to another edition of the HLS Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Ritter. You can call me NDTex. And as always, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. We only have a handful left over at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you happen to get your podcast feeds at. We will be live Thursday, December 30th on twitch.tv/HerLittleSuds for the final sim. Discord at HerLittleSuds.com/Discord. And for just a little bit longer, HerLittleSuns.com is where you can find us, but the archive will stay there forever. And with all that out of the way, Shane, how are you doing, man, this Selection Sunday, sir?
To quote Jessica Smetana from Twitter, boy, what a year this week has been.
God, no shit.
And before I continue, I should apologize to anyone listening. I'm not trying to whisper sweet nothings into your ear with this tone of voice. It's that now we're recording on Sundays, and my Sunday night protocol is silent mode past basically 9 p.m. because my wife wakes up very early to go to work, on Monday morning, so she's already in bed, and I'm right down the hallway, so I'm not soundproofing the room. I'm not on that level of effort. So my solution is to just lower the voice. So here we are.
But yeah. Much better than what I do, which is I get yelled at now. Yeah. We have kids going around, so there's not jobs, but I've been yelled at. You're a better man than I, Shane.
It's a small sacrifice for what? 4 episodes? Who gives a shit?
Not even that, because the rest of the episodes. Not even
that, half of that.
Yeah, we're going to be doing the recap episode. We'll record that Saturday night on New Year's Day. So the first podcast of 2022 will be our penultimate episode. We will have a farewell episode. The plan to do that on Tuesday. I think it's the 11th of January after the national title game. We'll put a bow on it, audio, and we'll have a farewell post up there as well. But we're going to get all the picks, pods, and everything. I'm going to have that listed out on HerLittleSuns.com within the next couple of days. But yeah, we're coming to an end, and I tell you what, Shane, knowing it's coming to an end, but it kind of in the way it's happened, because like you said, this week was quite a year, because it's crazy to think that it hasn't even been a full week yet. It hasn't even been a full 7 days. Even when we wake up on Monday morning, it will not have been a full 7 days since Brian Kelly left us. And then all of a sudden, a few days later, we got Marcus Freeman introduced as the coach of Notre Dame. I've been through a whirlwind of emotions. I got to record the picks pod right after it was announced, basically. But we haven't gotten a chance to hear your opinions on Mr. Freeman yet. Shane, how are you feeling about our new young hot coach that's going to be wandering the sidelines?
I was a full go the second Brian Kelly left. I mean, that was essentially like, I was fully on board with the idea. Not because of anything other than, we live in an era where, the players' voices have never been louder, and it was plainly evident from week one of this season that his effortless ability to galvanize the team was spreading like wildfire, throughout the entire roster, and, just unify messages and get everyone on board with the same goals, and, you know, preaching the same kind of like air of self-respect amongst each other and amongst them, you know, like their units and everything about the culture shift was like, God, man, this just this team. Yeah, and it was obviously fueled by the leaders, like Marcus Freeman said himself. It's the Kyron Williamses, you know, the Jack Cones, even the Jarrett Pattersons in the rooms. You can just tell that the leaders echoed everything he says very, very loudly, frequently, and, you know, to each other on a regular basis, because it was pretty easy to see all season that this team was like super galvanized. So when the opportunity arose for like, okay, we're talking Luke Fickell, we're talking fucking Matt Campbell, like I'm just hearing, you know, nothingness. But when you mentioned
Gerald, his name got fucking thrown out there.
I'm glad I didn't even hear that, because that's fucking nonsense. but when I heard Marcus Freeman, it was just like, this makes sense. I know it doesn't, you know, okay, it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. It makes sense, you know, in terms of what I'm seeing from this group of people, you know, if you remove the context of the situation in which this is happening, let's say this isn't a football team coach situation. Let's say this is a office of employees that suddenly had a new boss that has to be risen to the top of the chart. You take the guy that leads without effort. You take the guy that, you know, people want to follow. That's what you just do. So in this situation, it was just the smart thing to do. And I think given everything he's achieved in the past 5 years of his career, I don't think there's anything to doubt about the elevation of him to head coach. And yeah, it's maybe daunting, scary, tradition. Oh no, 35 years old, never, hasn't been done in our lifetime since the 50s. But I think, you know, that's part of the reason why we should.
Yeah.
Because it's time to change. It's time to try something new, not from the inside, like he said, they're not changing, but from the outside. What we're selling for this program, what we actually want to be as a football program. So I think that was a no-brainer.
I do too. It's what we were talking about. We felt like it was the only choice to make, very similar to when Elko left. It's like, well, you kind of have to elevate Lee, right? And even though Elston had a little bit of a groundswell back in that 2016 era, it was nothing like this. It was absolutely nothing. It was so unified. And not only was it for Freeman, they're like, hey, man, pay Tommy too. It was, you don't see teams and Notre Dame players in general are not extremely vocal on Twitter. Like, they'll post things here and there. During the NIL era, it was super great to see them do their ads. But, you know, they're like retweeting their friends. You know, they're like, hey, yeah, we got the dub, we're ready to go. Like, hype train, rise and grind type shit. Like, that's all they would do. They'd never really go out on a limb. But as soon as BK was gone, it was get the shock off, and then it was Freeman era. Freeman era. They had a hashtag going. Pay Tommy Rees, another hashtag going. That was incredible. And it was one of those things to where then I started to fear. It's like, well, if you don't hire this guy, you're going to have so many more pissed off players than even I initially realized.
Oh, yeah.
But lo and behold, Jack Schwarbrick, this is the second time he's done a coaching search. And this is the second time he has super held all his cards close to the vest, knew exactly who he was going for, who he was going to get. If you like listen to that press conference now, like what he was saying, it's like, yeah, I don't need to name an interim because, you know, interim wouldn't be a candidate for the head coach. Wink, wink, everybody.
Right.
It's like, look, you know, I don't have a list. Like, how absurd does that sound? I don't have a list. Like, I'm like, dude, Jack, that is bullshit. Like, you are lying right now because any leader, hell, is told, again, let's go into work.
Oh, he's had a list. He's had a list since 2013, buddy.
Exactly. He's got a list. There was a list past Freeman's name. Like, I'm sure the other part of it, yeah, we're going to list like the things that they want, but it gets compared to a list too. Like, I'm told I need to make sure I know who can immediately be my successor if I decide to go off to greener pastures at my job. And, you know, figure out, hey, well, I kind of have someone. Let's see how they do. And then, you know, later on I can say, you know what? There's a danger. We don't have a true successor. There could be a little bit of a risk here. There's obviously tons of risk, but I think the telling part that Notre Dame has done something incredibly unique and really, in my opinion, regained the identity. They've been the New York Yankees for too long. And now they're not even heading to be in the Boston Red Sox. They're like a fucking expansion team that came back out of nowhere saying, we're going to fuck you up on a small payroll, man. Because you just hired a 35-year-old black Asian man in Power 5 football at one of the premier institutions, if not one of the premier jobs, that regardless of what the record is, going to get all the attention. Talk about dominating the news cycle. I mean, after Brian Kelly did his bullshit Cajun accent, like, it was all about Freeman.
Family.
You know it was bad when I played that for Mrs. Tex. Like, I just want you to listen to something. Let me know if you hear anything that's off. And that's all I introduced it as. And she mocked him as soon as she heard that. Like, what the
so
fuck?
Fun- yeah, my mom was visiting me for the weekend. Both of our mothers were here because my wife's baby shower was the baby shower was this weekend. So,
oh, nice.
My mom stayed the weekend from Thursday to today. I dropped her off this evening, but on Thursday on Friday night I was airing SportsCenter, you know, because they had finally announced Freeman during the day. So I was just kind of putting it up, and that was the day the video was kind of blaring across the internet. Was Friday when he was like, when really it caught on to the main SportsCenter feeds.
Yeah, there was the morning where we all knew it, and then all of a sudden it's like the second wave just tsunamied.
So I put it on, and it just comes on. The segment just kind of comes on. Like, all right, so let me get it. They introduce it. Anyone tell me if you guys hear anything a little bit strange? And while they're introducing it, I'm passively but very quickly introducing to the family. So like, okay, you guys remember Brian Kelly, right? My mom's like, oh yeah, did he leave? What is he doing at that school? And I'm like, yeah, he left. And she's like, oh my god, what the hell? And then the thing cuts on, and before he can even get past like the pause after family, my mom just screams, "What the fuck, qué cabrón es esto? What the fuck?" I'm like, "Yeah, that's exactly the vibe, mom. That's the vibe." She's like, "He sounds like a fucking moron. Did he not realize he was on camera?" I'm like, "Yeah, exactly.
No, exactly. It's even better. LSU posted it on their official account."
Yeah, I was like, mom, it's not only that, like, they were proud of this. They were like, look at this guy. Isn't he a Southerner? My mom was like, I thought he was from Massachusetts. I'm like, he is.
he's very much from Massachusetts. He's had his coaching career above the Mason-Dixon line. It is still such a weird cult. It feels like such a weird fit. And I know, like, he's going to win football games. Like, let's, as much as we want him to lose every damn game that he plays,
he will. He'll win.
He'll win. I mean, there's too much. Spencer Hall, previously of Every Day Should Be Saturday, previously of that little site called SB Nation, and now on Channel 6, which is well worth your subscription money. If you haven't done it yet, does some good stuff. And it's just, and he mentioned, it's like, look, sometimes we praise coaches for the wrong reasons. Like, LSU has so many resources, like, at his disposal, he's going to just win. And that's not worthy of praise. And think about previous coaches that have been there. We saw Coach O didn't really have any interest in doing the job correctly, and he won a fucking national title. Les Miles
fucked around.
Couldn't manage a fucking clock to save his life, is out there eating grass, and was disposed of after, you know, just, he won a national title too, but he was disposed of about just as quickly. He lasted a little bit longer. And Nick Saban, look, he won there, and it wasn't by accident. What did he do? He parlayed that into NFL failure. There is a lot to be said. Yes, you can be a good coach. Brian Kelly obviously has done some good things. You know, his LSU teams will be a problem, but, man, it's just so weird. And I don't know how he's going to get his players behind him, because, man, when he walked into that room.
I'm going to be honest. Woo. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. Like, I know we laughed. It's still hilarious. It is funny how different the coach reception was between LSU, meet your new coach, and Notre Dame, meet your new head football coach, or whatever Matt Bayless screamed. I genuinely believe that's going to be a huge problem for him in year one. And not just that, the assistant coach buy-in as well. Like,
right.
Because you have to understand that, like, you could tell there was not, it's like you could, it's like the coaching staff at Notre Dame felt as though they were like rescued from something when Brian Kelly left, because it's like all of a sudden you could just sense this like will, like this like almost like they've been waiting to unify truly as a group. They've been waiting to truly be allowed to be friends, but you know, the man in charge wouldn't allow anybody to buy in that deep a way, because everybody felt like under the tutelage of an asshole, you know, and including the players. Like, instead of being able to like echo each other, they had to do like damage control a lot of the time. It felt as though trust had to be constantly reestablished over and over and over again in Brian Kelly's methodology and his words and his bullshit isms, like traits and fucking RKGs, like nonsense. You know what I mean? Like, you could just tell that he never really. Nobody on the team looked at Brian Kelly and was like, whoa, that's Brian Kelly. They more like, oh, fuck, here comes Brian Kelly. Jesus Christ. I hope I'm not about to get ripped apart. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because they never dealt with him. They never really dealt with him. But like, when the team was set free, you know, now the voices, like even listening to Tommy Rees on the Fiesta Bowl video conference today, like you could just hear him like not have to think about what he can and can't share about his opinions.
Well, and let's take a step back even further. Tommy Rees was in a press conference for bowl season.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
That we hadn't seen him all season.
We hadn't seen him all season, basically. He hadn't been allowed to speak all season. It's just like, I feel bad for the LSU players, but I genuinely believe that the coaches are going to have a hard time acclimating to this new way of like, we have to do whatever he commands, like whatever he is insisting upon, whether or not the players are interested in buying in. So like, we're going to have to tread shitty water for a long time.
Yeah, it's going to be super interesting to see how it works out. But that's an LSU problem, quite frankly, because
fuck them, man, of course.
Yeah, Notre Dame getting Freeman. And one of the things, I am so far in the bag for him because, you know, like we said, like, God, PK was an asshole. Look, all college coaches are, for the most part. There are the few rare exceptions. As much as, you know, Dabo is an asshole, but he's a special kind of one because he will, if somebody throws one of his players under the bus, he'll go try to, like, knock it off the track himself. Like, that's just the kind of guy Dabo is. As much as it makes our stomachs turn, and he says some real dumb shit about, like, player compensation and stuff, that's who he is. Now, Marcus Freeman, I mean, he's what's called a servant leader. And it was somebody I was glad Seabus Irish picked that out on Twitter, because not a whole lot of people know that term. And if you haven't heard it before, it's basically somebody in a position of power, management, leadership, that basically knows and takes the approach that I only succeed when the people below me do. So I need to empower them. You tell me how I can help you. You tell me your dreams and ambitions. We're going to find a way to get there together, because obviously you'd like to go somewhere where I am. You know, you're taking, you respect me, you respect my leadership. So how about I, you know, mentor you and get you to that position? It's not somebody that, you know, Weiss had a line of, you know, and this was his first meeting with the team, and I don't mind saying this anymore. I'm so far removed from Weiss. He walked in there and said that, I will take every single bullet that is shot at this program, but I will be spreading those bullets back out in private. That's not the way a servant leader reacts. I mean, that's the hard-nosed old school football mentality. Like, hey, I'll take the heat, and then, you know, your ass is grass come next practice. No. This is all about you. This is about you guys. This is about the future. It's not about me. I don't stand up here if it's not for you. Like, just think about all that stuff where the players are told, you did this, you did that. Prepping them for a victory that hasn't even happened yet. And that's why I'm just so floored, because it is such an effective style of leadership. It has yet to fail me wrong in my career, how I've managed just about everything else. It's not that you're going to be a fucking pushover. Sometimes you got to lay the law down. I have no doubt Freeman will do that. I have no doubt that the disciplinarian part will come to that. But it is a very unique style. And the thing is that a lot of people talk about it, and it is so hard to master because you have to be genuine at it. Like, Brian Kelly, I think, tried to pretend somewhat to be like that. But his style, what he figured out would work is, okay, I got to kind of be hands-off and let people coach, let players play. but I still got to make sure that I'm the final say in this, the very CEO type style. Mm-hmm. And it worked for him at Notre Dame. To his credit, made great hires, including the next head coach of Notre Dame. So I thank you for that. But that is the thing, is that that was one of the more genuine speeches and reactions I've seen from a football coach. And this is a guy that is an Ohio State, not just alumnus, but a former Ohio State Buckeye football player. When I was mm-hmm. in the stands as a manager at the Fiesta Bowl, Marcus Freeman was on the fucking field, y'all.
Yeah.
Like, that's wild to think about. Yeah. Marcus Freeman was playing against the Irish in that game. But he gets Notre Dame. He gets why it's a special place. And he is unabashedly selling it. If you want to talk about a way to get a lot of old asses super happy with you and behind you, man, just talk about how great the university is. Lou Holtz freaking said it too. It's like, you know, Brian Kelly never talked about Notre Dame. Well, I mean, he did, but just not in the way you wanted him to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing.
He just didn't suck the dome's dick.
Exactly. He is kneeling at the altar of the dome exactly how he should. He's an extremely smart man, and he's going to have bumps and bruises. We've seen them as a year one DC at Notre Dame. He definitely had some. It will not be perfect. But I tell you what, I will take the imperfection of a clear rising star that is so young, and to serve as an example, because look at all the chaos that's going around the coaching carousel. And what did we decide to do? Hey, let's go elevate the 35-year-old person of color. By the way, we're like the whitest university ever doing this. Come look at us. Everybody's like, well, damn. Like, people were genuinely happy for not just Marcus Freeman, but like, damn, am I a Notre Dame fan now?
Yep.
Like, that single move of not just BK going to the wayside. You know, people were like, damn, the playoff committee's treating him like shit. But when Freeman got hired, it was like, oh, buddy. Let him in. We can like him.
Yeah, it was possibly one of the most shocking aspects of the way the news rolled out was the overwhelming national response to flip to, you know, Notre Dame sympathizers from, you know, this entire decade plus 2 years of, you know, fucking everybody hating Notre Dame. And you know, at first it seemed a lot of like, okay, old traditional hate exists here. You know, when Brian Kelly's tenure started, and it was just, you know, one of those things. It was kind of funny to hate Notre Dame, but also people just still hated Notre Dame. But as Brian Kelly's tenure unfolded, a lot more haters were coming aboard year after year, and definitely 2012, you know, didn't help that. Their rise to number one because the BCS computers existed, and then their shellacking at the hands of Alabama like gave people even more excuses. Like, see, this coach sucks ass. You know, then you have the purple faces, you have the Declan Sullivan, you have this story, that story. Nationally, it was just as he grew into his role, you know, it became evident to me very quickly. It's like, okay, I understand. Like, it used to be that I would be like, why do you waste energy hating Notre Dame? They've done nothing to you. Like, it's just, you just have this issue about like their image or their aura, or you're calling them elitist, or the same old tired arguments. Like, that was my original perspective. But after Brian Kelly came around, by the third or fourth year, it was pretty evident. I was like, yeah, this man has some issues in terms of likability. But you know, I chalk that up to the politician's son, but like, and all that stuff. But, you know, that ended up being a huge part of what happened when the news broke. That part ended up factoring in a lot more than I think I realized. That the hatred for the man, Brian Kelly, and his representation of the university, like, that duo made it like a hyper hateable institution. Right. But Brian Kelly's removal suddenly is like, okay, well, there's that little nebulous like idea of Notre Dame, but they don't seem to still quite be that right now. So like, let's wait till see where they land to then identify what they are. And then the fact that they decided, well, everyone in the sport respects, enjoys, and like admires what Marcus Freeman has done, and everybody remembers that name right now, and the players are all about it. Like, them decided to do that, like, all of a sudden the national media were like, whoa, like, we like this idea. Like, Notre Dame did something correct. Notre Dame did something we agree with, which is like that was the clear moment where everyone decided, okay, well, I think we're going to like this team. I think they're going to be dope. And, oh, maybe Tyler Buckner's going to be good. Oh, Tommy Rees, maybe he is a genius. Oh, like, all these things that they were naysaying all season. It's like all of a sudden, hey, maybe Jack Cohen is pretty decent. It's like, what the fuck did you just say? You know what I mean?
It was a weird baby face turn for Notre Dame. They're like, yeah, embrace the heel turn, man. Like, piss everybody off. And then all of a sudden it's like, yo, you're Dusty Rhodes talking about hot times now. Like, super lean into it. You're the American dream now. And it's hilarious because it almost, and I know it's beyond early to make this declaration, but I only have so many times to make it, so what the fuck? It really feels like it's going back to the roots of what Notre Dame was. It was this plucky underdog type situation constantly, even though in their heyday, when they had tons of fans across the nation, they had resources out the ass. It just didn't matter because they were still likable, hard-nosed, just, yeah, we're going to go right at you. And that is so great that we're seeing that again, that kind of attitude. And the players have had it for a long time. So we've seen it. And that's why it's like, look, Brian Kelly has done something right because he's instilled this within the program. Now, some of it obviously seems to be more responsible of like the people below him than others, but it was still there and it took him a while to figure it out. It's unbelievable to see the incredible face turn. It's great.
It is. It's just like this. I suspect Marcus at some point is going to, you know, there's probably going to be some involvement in the campaign about like reestablishing the fighting in Fighting Irish. You know what I mean? But like, that's what it feels like. That's what the team used to be. You know, the Irish part was not the dominant portion of the identity. You know, that was not the majority of what the team as on the field was about, you know, in its heyday, in its inception, as it were, you know, coming up through the ranks and earning those national titles, be it through, you know, a now bygone era, but like that was what it was. They were built to be this Subway, you know, Domer developing national brand type thing.
Exactly.
So the fighting was like the all encompassing image, and then the Irish was like the hook, you know, like also bring the all Irish welcome as well. Like, get your fucking asses over here, enjoy this sport, enjoy this team. Like, during a time when that was important, during a time when that message needed to be spread, needed to be, you know, broadcast, you know, much like a social injustice era that we live in right now. But at that time, it's just weird to see this program kind of come full circle from its original, you know, original branding to now be this, like, maybe for different, no, not maybe, entirely for different reasons, but you understand, right? But the same view now, where it's like that team, I wouldn't want to fucking play that team.
Exactly.
I'll tell you that. You know what I mean? That's the team I would not want. I do not want a piece of that. When was the last time you could hear someone like Spencer Hall say, I would not want to even touch this Irish team right now? No one ever has respected them in such a way since before Brian Kelly, since before Charlie Woods, since before Tyrone Williams, and since Lou Holtz, probably, at this point.
Yeah, it is. It is a different attitude, and there's a buy-in that we're getting to see from the players that we're going to see on New Year's Day. And talk about just, you know, I wanted the Fiesta Bowl, and we'll talk more about it later, but just to get off to a completely fresh start.
Hell yeah.
With this, it's a new year, it is a new era, and, you know, basically Freeman's got, you know, damn near an entire month to figure things out, get used to a crazy holiday schedule, kind of figure out what his cadence is going to be, what his routine is going to be. And in the meantime, he's still out recruiting his ass off.
He's going to get to lean on his assistants. And I mean, he's going to extra get to lean on Tommy Rees, who's been through how many bowl cycles now in his career, especially at this school, including his playing time. So like, this is something that he can kind of like, this is what Notre Dame expects and conducts itself. And not to mention to this very bowl they've been. So,
yes, absolutely. Cause he gets that perspective. Tommy knows how, and seeing the progression of like the things BK has changed within the program. But I think the other important person he's going to lean on is our new defensive coordinator, Mike Elston.
Mike Elston is
somebody, again, that absolutely deserved the defensive coordinator position for years. Oh, yeah. Like, had he been elevated instead of Elko being hired. Clark Lee's kind of an iffy one because that was going to be a wreck if they had done it then. And even going to Marcus Freeman. Like, if Elson had been hired, I would have said, you know what? He deserves it. He's been doing this for so damn long. And he is going to be somebody that can, you know, mentor, even from a role below, you know, as far as title goes, below Marcus Freeman. But that is going to be a guy that's seen it all, has seen where Coach Kelly has fucked up, is going to be able to tell him, hey, you know, I see you falling in this trap that I've seen before. The guy's been coaching with Kelly since 2004, and he decided that, no, my heart's here. And that's the other thing I think that's really going to, like, buy in some people that have soured on the program, especially Notre Dame people, is the fact that, yeah, Kelly left, but basically everybody else told him to go take a fucking hike. This is a great job. Yeah. What the hell are you doing, dude?
Yeah. How can, like, you that's, leave?
It's like, I don't care that he went for the money. I super hate the timing. I hate the way he did it. I also hate it. I almost would have rather him just never come back to South Bend to talk to the team, because I think that was a gigantic miscalculation. All of this seems miscalculated. I think you said that as well on the last podcast. Like, for somebody that's so calculated like BK, this made no sense.
He just shot from the hip. It made no fucking sense.
Yeah, but that is actually an era it feels like we're going to. It's going to be an era of more pure, raw emotion. That could be a ride, y'all. So buckle up. We're going to have a lot of talented kids. We got a hell of a talented coach and coaching staff, but it ain't going to be perfect.
We may enter an era where, like, we hear quarterbacks, like, regularly talk, like, about their shit. You know what I'm saying? Like I am extremely curious about, yes, they're going to package a lot of messages into these kids' mouths, but, like, also what they empower them to say for themselves, because it's going to be a totally different voice coming out of each and every one of those kids, you know, the next couple years speaking to the media. I'm super thrilled to see that.
Yeah, it's going to be an adventure. I'm extremely pumped about it. Any other reactions that you have, Shane, before we start talking about the next phase for the Irish?
No, honestly, man, all I can think is, you know, new year, new team we've never played before, new coach. It's going to be a fucking awesome experience. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, with that, let's take care of a little podcast business. All right, Shane. Now it's time to talk actual football, or at least the potential for actual football. Like you said, a team we've never played before, Oklahoma
State.
Which
you don't see very often. That's not common.
Not common. And Auburn is very quickly going to be like the last damn school Notre Dame ever fucking plays.
Yeah,
I swear to God.
They still haven't played either. What the fuck? Okay, anyway, go on.
It's so weird. but this one's even, well, Auburn's been around forever too, but both these schools have been around for such a fucking long time. But man, what are your thoughts on it at first? I'm interested to see, before I start going off, I'm interested to see what you feel this matchup is like, because I definitely got some opinions.
I feel like Tommy Reese knows who he's dealing with here in terms of what level of defense he's facing. You know, I think Tommy Reese looks at this team, and he called it out in his press conference. He's like, it's very easy to look at Oklahoma State and think offense, offense, offense. But he's like, no. This defense is doing some dark shit. You know what I mean? Like, he knows. But just in watching Oklahoma State, you know, evaporate against Baylor in the first quarter in the Big 12 championship, so 2-21 points, It causes alarm. Did they correct it for the next three quarters by not allowing another point afterwards? Yes. But they couldn't undo the damage that was done. And they certainly couldn't overcome it. So that is fine. Their defense is, you know, can figure it out and can be daunting, but they can also be exposed for a period, get caught off balance, and really run through the ringer for a good quarter. But their offense does not yield the same "oh shit" feeling that most Oklahoma State offenses have yielded in the past. And Spencer Sanders is all well and good. He's a lot like Cincinnati's quarterback Desmond Ridder. He's got the same height. He's got the same mobility. But something about this maybe it's the line, maybe it's the packages that they're trying to put out there, but it just doesn't seem, they don't have the same lethal firepower. And certainly I think this defense, Notre Dame's defense, because Baylor definitely gave them fits for the second half. Notre Dame's defense is on another level above Baylor's. Not for nothing. Not to overcredit Marcus Freeman and everything. It's just empirically what they achieved this season and what they achieved especially in November. The defense is just not going to give Oklahoma State a better time than Baylor did. Absolutely not. Take context out of it even. And I don't think talent matchup wise that they would have the gas to keep up with the depth at the defensive line position, at the linebacker position that Notre Dame has in the front seven. Like they just wouldn't keep it up. So I think it's a good matchup overall. I think it'll be interesting. I think it'll be, you know, not high scoring, but like, you know, you could see like a 30s to 20s type of thing. And, you know, that could be all fun and good. And, you know, nobody's going to walk away terrified about any aspect of either team. And, you know, everyone would feel good about it. But it's definitely, it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, I honestly think this is one of those, it's a nightmare matchup, in my opinion, for Oklahoma State because of how they're constructed. And it's really because, like you said, it's how you're going to score points. Like, your defense is going to be a fit. Yeah, so we got to have Jack Cohn on it. And we saw the last time we played a defense, like a really good one, and I'm talking Wisconsin here. Yeah, Notre Dame struggled. But you're going to get now an offense that's figured it out. Hopefully you have a rotation that makes a little bit more sense with Tyler Buchner. And you're really going to get to see how Freeman's going to want to handle that. Or is he just going to say, Tommy, I'm going to let you read the room on this one. I need you, you know, I'll give you a suggestion or who knows. But if you can get Buchner involved and have a good rotation with Cohn, I don't think this defense can stop the offense consistently. Notre Dame's not going to blow them out of the water, I don't think. If it does happen, it'll be because of a lot of turnovers, which we saw Sanders is prone to. Now, the other big piece of that Big 12 championship game, I do want people to take pause because Jaylen Warren did not play a single snap of that game. He was dressed, he didn't do shit, and then he went into the locker room. So he should be healthy unless there's something severely wrong with him. If he was feeling good enough to dress and warm up, I assume he was just kind of right there, and it just wasn't worth risking further injury to him, even in that big of a game. But if he is back, that is a huge weapon. He has rushed for over 1,000 yards, and he also has gotten a handful of receptions as well. Total yards from scrimmage is 1,325 and 11 total touchdowns. And that piece being missing in that Baylor matchup was absolutely ginormous. Sure. Considering what happened later on in the game, if you have Jaylen Warren, maybe if you even have him on just that last play where they fell
just
in
the last
short,
play, their last run, he gets the edge for sure.
Yeah, I think he scores or he runs somebody over or something. So
he's also taller than the player who tried to reach, so that would have mattered. He might have hit the pylon.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, game of inches, including in the person actually holding the ball. But just with what Oklahoma State is constructed as, this plays into Notre Dame's hands, mostly because that passing attack is not overly scary because Sanders is, you know, it's not that deep passing attack. This team excels on the ground more so than anything. They excel on the ground. And that's where Notre Dame, if they have a weakness on defense, that's where it's going to be because we don't know if Kyle Hamilton's going to play or not. He's got a business decision to make.
Oh, yes. That's another question now, because we know the bowl destination. Does he bother? Does he Jalen Smith himself? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, and it's one of those things of I have a feeling he'd really want to go out there for Freeman, but at the same time, he's going to be looking at it and say, wait a second, literally the last time there was a hyped defensive player in this very bowl against a team with the abbreviations OSU.
Yeah, like, the school against the school you went to, coach.
Exactly. It's like, you know what?
Too many signs.
This doesn't sound good. It's like, I don't know if you've noticed, but Jalen Smith's career is doing so hot right now.
Yeah, he's not playing anywhere right now, is he? I'd like to play a little bit longer.
What's that?
Is Jalen Smith playing anywhere right now?
No, the Packers. I don't know if the team picked him up after the Packers.
Eeks. Okay.
Yeah, so he's going to be one of those guys. He's probably on a practice squad somewhere, I would imagine. Or maybe he's just kind of taking a little bit of time off and reloading to go. Somebody will pick him up next year and he'll have a chance at training camp. But Yeah, it's going to be tough sledding for him. But he was Jalen was a no doubt, just like Kyle, top five pick. Yeah. And then it all came crashing down in a nightmare. Now, yeah, a lot of that's bad luck, but that's the thing that's got to go through a mind of a young kid. It's like, is this game really worth it? Now I got to think about my career. I got to think about making generational money for my family.
It's a no-brainer, I think. But
so,
I also understand wanting to play.
Oh, yeah. Both, I would be fine with either situation. But we have seen this for Notre Dame. If there is a weakness in that defense, that's definitely where the suspect parts are. Now, with all that being said, you've got Xavier Watts. Let's move back to safety. That's been doing just fine. And you've been mixing and matching people. You know, Houston Griffith still not playing as well as you'd like. Cam Hart could probably play a little better as Clarence Lewis. But the other part is that defense was so tired because there's just no depth to it because of all the injuries. This defense is going to look so much better, especially up in the front seven. It's going to be genuinely terrifying to see what they do to this rushing attack and the pressure that they can get on Sanders. Because in that game against Baylor, Sanders was never comfortable in the pocket. Buddy, this pass rush is worse.
Yeah, it was not on the level he would be exposed to against the Notre Dame front seven. Marcus is going to unleash all the weapons, you know, at all the worst times. It's going to be a sellout game. It's a one and done. It's a 1-0 season for Marcus Freeman. Like, there's no better time to, you know, to not only get your sea legs underneath you, but like to kind of cut loose, you know, to really let momentum, you know, catch fire into the next season. So I think, yeah, it's going to be, I think it's just going to be something where like, I can't think of the last bowl game, but I get the sense that it's going to be thrilling enough and satisfying enough to be a wire-to-wire watch, the kind of thing that you want to stay plugged into. But I also don't think it's going to feel like Notre Dame is going to ever be in too much trouble at any given time, you know? I think it's going to be one of those games where if so long as they continue to execute and leverage, you know, their matchups, they should kind of, you know, walk to 30 points plus and, you know, let the defense kind of have a day.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of, if you get 30 points, let me pull up Oklahoma State's schedule because I don't think they put up 30 points too many times. They did it against Kansas State. They did 31. They did it against Texas, LOL, 32. Kansas,
I'm not saying they could even close to Notre Dame, that's for sure. I'm saying Notre Dame put 30 points on them and walk away.
Exactly. Well, I'm just seeing, like you said, like at 30 points, it's like, who have they done it against? 55 against Kansas, 63 against the Husk of TCU, and hilariously 37 on Oklahoma. But beyond that, yeah, it's all scores in the 20s, man.
I mean, what defenses did they play? You know what I'm saying? those cases.
They played Missouri State, and they only won 23-16. That was how they opened the season. And then their schedule was after Missouri State, Tulsa, Boise, Kansas State, Baylor for the first time, Texas, Iowa State, which they lost, Kansas, West Virginia, TCU, and that was after the firing. Texas Tech, again, no coach, but they did shut them out. Oklahoma, they had a coach in spirit. His body was there. Actually, they brought one in spirit. His body was there. I don't know about his mind. And then second match against Baylor, which they dropped. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is not the high-powered offense. But like I said, that's why I like the matchup, because it's not like they can't score. It is they run a new ball control offense, man. They will still take shots. That hasn't like disappeared. They will still go deep. But that is not like the crux of it. Des Bryant ain't walking through that door anymore. Like it is completely different how they've started. Actually, Gundy mentioned it too. He said that when they have like an ideal allocation of scholarships on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, and he said they made a conscious decision to move scholarships from the offensive side to the defensive side. It's like, now you're seeing the dividends of it. This is a process we started a couple of years ago. So this has been a very conscious decision by Gundy to basically say, we're going to change our colors here. I know changing colors sounds very weird because we're involving Mike Gundy in this situation, but that is basically what they've done here. They have completely changed their strategy, and honestly, a smart move, because if you actually look at the teams that cause issues, it's Iowa State, it's Baylor, It is this Oklahoma State team. They're teams that say, hey, guess what, boys? We play defense. We're actually going to hit you this week. And you haven't been hit all year.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. It's going to be a great way to start the game out. But I just hope, more than anything, we could get rid of this stupid haven't won a New Year's game. And that's the other reason I really wanted the Fiesta Bowl. Not only it's like, Thursday night game doesn't sound good. It's like, look, it's a New Year's Day game.
Yeah.
Like, where do you want to move the goalposts this time?
Well, that's what I was telling my wife. I was like, man, New Year's Day is like, it's just a day to like fuck off and just watch football. I mean, it's like the most you fuck off watching football too, because it's like, it's nothing but like big bowl games. So it's just like ad after ad after ad, excuse after excuse to get the fuck up off the couch and go do something else. But you know what I mean? Like, you just sit there instead and you just consume every fucking, at the time, Tostitos ad they got. You know, just dip after dip after chip. But like, it's New Year's Day. Like, it's the day of like, you partied a little too hard the night before. You know, you forgot how old you had gotten this year. You know,
damn, how late did we stay up again last night? That'll be.
You're having breakfast at 3 p.m. Like, it's a perfect it's a perfect day to just stumble on and be like, oh shit, we're in the second quarter. All right, we're watching this. That's the vibe.
Yeah, and the other games that are on around it are not overly appealing in the noon time slot. So I am very much going to have all my attention on this with no worry.
This starts at what time?
This will start at noon on your time zone, 11 o'clock in God's time zone. So actually, excuse me, 1 p.m. I got the time fixed up. 1 p.m. Eastern, noon in God's time
zone. Even better. Oh, yeah. Right after lunch, just have like a nice digestion of football. Amazing.
Yeah, because even when my kids have woken up too damn early after New Year's Day, it'll be, look, I'm alive, I've had my caffeine, I've either decided to just keep going or, you know, settle the hangover. But I'm excited. Like you said, it's going to be a perfect relaxing day, especially because it's New Year's Day on a weekend. You're not worried about having to go to work the next day. Like, we really could not have asked for a better situation to wrap this sucker up. So I'm extremely excited. I'm also excited for the team because this is the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl.
Yes.
And by God, if they don't have PlayStation 5s for every single player, they have to.
They are going to.
Very thrilled for them just to have that.
Yeah, like, they're probably going to get PS5s and PSVRs and just the whole damn works. Just go nuts. They deserve that. They deserve just to be young guys fucking having fun, because that's essentially what the staff is now. It's just a collection of like-minded young men who, you know, are in that perfect bracket of ages where it's like, here are the mentors that are, you know, paving the way for themselves while helping you pave the way for the next one. It's just like, it's a perfect time to go out there, you know, and there's not a ton to fucking do in Arizona. So just, you know, absolutely go wild with a PlayStation 5 party at the hotel or something. You know what I mean?
Ask Jerry Tillery if there's not much you could do out there because he didn't play. Did he get suspended? Wasn't it him?
He sure did.
So we'll see about that, which was still weird. I still have no idea because, of course, BK. Because
Brian Kelly's a dick face. Let's just call it what it is.
I honestly
all of those suspensions is because Brian Kelly's a dick face.
I cannot wait for the first traits discussion at LSU. Or if he just completely pushes that to the side. It's going to be really
interesting. No, he's probably going to completely push it aside. He's probably just going to be like, okay, well, no felonies. Have a good one.
Oh, there's felonies. Well, don't tell anybody about it. Have a good one.
Yeah. Basically.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up, Shane. Went a little bit longer than I thought we would on this one. But apparently that happens when you gush about your head coach.
Like, I'm just one of those happy about... I just want to wrap it up with this thought. I'm very, very happy about where this team is right now in time and space. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so glad Brian Kelly did this. I'm so glad he forced this circus of nonsense to spin into the perfect... Like, I just imagine the Wheel of Fortune. Like, Brian Kelly on the way out, spinning the wheel as hard as he can and thinking, ha, 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 they're going to land on bankrupt and that just hitting jackpot. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so glad he forced the hand, and like ultimately the Fiesta Bowl is going to be like, it's going to feel like an appetizer. It's going to feel like a tease because like we're going to enjoy it and hopefully Notre Dame wins and everything. But like at the end of the game, we're all going to realize really know how much about Marcus Freeman we got out of this. You know what I mean? They're probably not going to do enough camera lingering on him, which they fucking should all day. There should be a camera feed on him 24/7 and like picture in picture in the bottom right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they Freeman cam it. We'll be seeing a lot of cutovers.
I would love a Freeman cam. If somebody's in the stadium, somebody make that happen. But like we're still going to just have only gotten our introduction. That's going to be the feeling. Like at the end of the day, at the end of the game, we're going to be like, now we got to see him for the first time. Then we're going to have to wait a whole other offseason to see him again. And it's going to be torture, you know, to see him go through spring practice. All that stuff is going to be fun, but it's going to be like, I want to see the product. I want to see him. I want to see who he signs. I want to see, you know, what he does with these players. All that stuff is going to feel like it's going to take so long to get to it. But when we do, man, when we do, I'm telling you, that penchant for Notre Dame to fuck around and win national championships in years with double digits that are the same may come to fruition in 2022.
Starts, and you're not going to have to worry about the resume next year because Ohio State ain't going to have a fucking collapse, and guess where game one is?
That's right.
Like, that's right. That is wild to think. Marcus Freeman's two games are going to be a New Year's Six Bowl and going to his fucking alma mater, which will probably be a preseason top five matchup. That's what we're staring down the barrel of right now. And not only that, he's coaching a team that is that fucking team in the postseason. But not only that, this is the team that everybody's like, oh, well, they didn't make the playoff, but oh, shit, somebody's got to play them. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the number five team. That is like the worst team that you could draw.
That's we've been the highest ranked loser.
How many times have we been on the other end of this bullshit? We've had these what if situations. What if we didn't draw Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl? What if we had played Kansas State in 2012? Yeah. Like, finally, everything's coming up, Millhouse, right now.
It's about damn time.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us, y'all. Thank you for listening, giving us a listen. Make sure you subscribe to the pod over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you happen to get your podcast feeds at. Make sure to join us at Discord and chat us up over at herlolsons.com/Discord. We'll be on twitch.tv, herlolsons, live at December 30th on Thursday nights. And of course, you can find us at herlolsons.com. So next time, y'all, go Irish, beat Cowboys, have a good one.